You're listening to The Air of the Time. I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome. Why are you looking at me?
I didn't look at you.
You did, too.
You just want something to talk about, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Well, I've got a big broadcast to do here, sweetheart, and we just don't have time to talk tonight. Okay? Hello?
All right.
Okay. I'll come tuck you in later.
All right.
Good night, baby.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, things are going a little bit crazy. Here we've got an airliner down off the coast of New Jersey, and President, I just hate to say that before the name Clinton. My tongue balks every time. President Clinton has this serious look on his face, which he never had. You notice the little smirk is gone, and his hair is now gray instead of blonde. And he is trying his best to become an actor and pretend that he's a president. And, of course, he can't pull it off. During Ron Brown's funeral, when he came walking out, he was laughing and joking and carrying on with this big outhouse-eating grin on his face. And then he saw the cameras there, and all of a sudden he got a serious look on his face, and he began to pretend that he was wiping tears out of his eyes. Now he's pretending again. He wants so badly to be able to prove that that airliner was downed by a terrorist that he can taste it. He is almost beside himself. And yet he still says, well, we must be very cautious about jumping to conclusions before we have the facts to back it up. It sounds like he knows those facts are going to come out of the woodwork somewhere, and he's just waiting for them as if he's on pins and needles. It's almost scary knowing what I know, knowing who he is and what he's about, to watch this charade being carried out, and then have the reams of information coming in that is coming in from New Jersey and from our military sources and Coast Guard. By the way, the Coast Guard issues a statement that the C-131 that was in the area dropping flares was on a routine exercise. Well, that just isn't true, ladies and gentlemen, because we checked with our sources in the Coast Guard to find the schedule of that routine exercise, find any advance plan, any flight plan that had been, anything that would prove that it was a routine exercise. And guess what? It was not a routine exercise. There is no such record. We called the Coast Guard and asked them what the C-131 was doing in the area. They said it was a routine exercise and had been planned for several weeks. We asked them if it was a routine exercise, how come there was no record of this exercise existing anywhere? And guess what the Coast Guard did? They hung up on us instantly. Oh, yes, just like Oklahoma City, just like Waco, just like Ruby Ridge, the intelligence service will get to the bottom of it. I can guarantee you that. Oh, yes, we will. Before I get into our first story tonight, I want to reiterate what I have said in the past concerning the Freeman in Montana. And that is that Leroy Schweitzer, several years ago, I don't know exactly how many, at my request sent me a huge package of his research and findings in the common law. And in the legality of what he was just then beginning to do, which he called at that time writing money orders. I don't know what it ended up being called. And I looked over this package, which was about 6 inches thick, ladies and gentlemen, tremendous amount of research and legal documentation. And I could find absolutely nothing wrong with it. Nothing whatsoever. And I said that on the air many times. I also said that I disagreed that a group of people who have so criticized the Federal Reserve System should be doing essentially exactly what the Federal Reserve System has done and began to create money from nothing. To me, that is hypocrisy. I could not go along with that. And so did not. Approve or condone that action and still do not. Also, I know that some of the freemen in Montana near Jordan had committed what I consider to be some very terrible bad things against their neighbors. One of the neighbors, a man who had leased a field, large acreage, and had planted wheat and taken care of the wheat and watched it grow up to harvest time and came out with a crew to harvest his wheat and was turned back by the Freeman at gunpoint. We know this is true. There were several witnesses. We've spoken to the man, to the witnesses. We know that the Freeman farm was 900 and some odd acres, but a township, ladies and gentlemen, is 1 square mile. And somehow, by hook or crook, they got control of some land that did not belong to them. Now, I don't believe at all that Leroy Schweitzer is responsible for all of these things. I believe Leroy Schweitzer was responsible for a tremendous amount of research, which was sometimes adequately and properly used by other people, and sometimes inadequately and improperly used by other people. And I don't believe that Leroy Schweitzer intended what he had researched and what he had done to go as far as it did. I think he originally intended it to be used for people to get out from under the system and set themselves free. I believe that with all my heart. I believe Leroy Schweitzer to be a good man. I don't know very much about the others. I do know some of the acts that some of the others have performed, and I don't like it. Can't condone it, and I'm not going to play the hypocrite and pretend that I do. I do not. I also did not advocate militia intervention in the so-called siege against the Freeman in Montana. simply because any action against the freemen in Montana would have lost the support of the majority of the American people who had been propagandized and would have resulted in a total destruction of those who would fight for freedom and whom we need to fight for freedom eventually when we can do so and when we must do so and when we're forced to do so in the ultimate conflict that is to come. It was not the place or the reason to risk everything in a military action. You see, ladies and gentlemen, our numbers are many, but compared to the general population, they are few. Compared to the technology and the forces that we face, they are few. With the support of the general population, or at least a good portion of the general population, we could fight a guerrilla war to reinstate constitutional republican government as the supreme law of the land if it took 20 years, and we could be successful and victorious. Without the support of a portion of the population of America, we could not last one winter, and that is the truth. And anyone who has studied guerrilla warfare and has studied warfare throughout the history of the world knows that that statement that I just made is absolutely 100% correct. And that's why the forces that are arrayed against us are attempting to provoke through agent provocateurs, through incidents like the Freeman incident in Montana, through incidents like the Viper incident in Phoenix, the Waco, Texas massacre, which, by golly, we could have had the support of the people if we had gone to their defense, for they had done nothing. They didn't even have the machine gun they were accused of having, and if they did have it, it only required the payment of a $200 tax, which I would have gladly paid out of my own pocket to prevent the death of all those people. BATF wasn't interested in that, neither was the FBI, and is still not interested in it. And now we have a very strange thing going on. Very strange thing. Remember, I told you that if the freemen were right in the law, they would prevail in court. I said it over and over and over again, and they could never prove it by holding out on that property unless they had the courage of their convictions and were willing to die for their beliefs. And if we saw that happen, and if there was going to be a massacre and they were going to stand and fight for their beliefs, then I would have urged the militia to go to their defense. But not until. And it was no Waco situation, ladies and gentlemen. Could not even be equated in the most remote manner with anything that happened at Waco, Texas. I also said if they were wrong, they would not prevail in court. You see, I know something about our enemy that none of you know. If you go along as an average citizen and you expect to get justice in an American courtroom today, especially a federal courtroom, you are mistaken. It will not happen. Most of you people who run around and you read a couple of books and you go and you read a couple of statutes at large and you think you understand the law and you go into court and try to represent yourself, you're not going to have any justice in court either. But somebody like Leroy Schweitzer, who sent me that 6-inch package of research and documentation, I knew, and everybody else who understands the common law and understands the courtless system knew, that if he were allowed to get in courtroom and state his case, if he was right, he would win. He would prevail. And that's the truth, and I told you that over and over again on this broadcast. And we'll continue to tell you that. But if they didn't understand the law, if they were full of BS and their research was wrong, they would lose. They would not prevail. Because our enemy, the Illuminati, stands upon law. They will subvert the law. They will pervert the law. They will go around the law. They will stand the law upon its head whenever they have a stupid, dumb citizen in front of them who doesn't know anything about the law. But when they have someone who understands and knows the law standing in front of them, they give that person the utmost respect, ladies and gentlemen. They always have. And they always will. Sometimes grudgingly, but they will do it, and they will adhere strictly to the law when you are right within the law. A Supreme Court justice once said, and he was 100% correct, that 99% of all the people in prison today are there because they volunteered to go. Now, I've preached and I've taught on these subjects since I began this broadcast over 4 years ago. And tonight we have a report from Pat Shannon. And he says, on Wednesday, July 17th, Freeman Leroy Schweitzer sat as Chief Justice Schweitzer in a Billings, Montana courtroom and directed the first common law grand jury to be heard in 135 years in America. Their purpose was to pass judgment over a lower jurisdiction. With apparent deference, Federal District Judge James Burns appeared on the bench without his black robe in the United States Courthouse to direct the proceedings. After an introductory statement, he yielded to the Superior Court in the charge of Chief Justice Leroy Schweitzer, who then alerted the prosecution attorneys to not object because I will only overrule you. The five other justices were Freeman, Stuart Waterhouse, whom we know is a provocateur, ladies and gentlemen, Ross Landers, Ellen Ward, Rod Skirdall, and Emmett Clark. They flashed a smile of pride each time Judge Burns referred to their old friend Leroy as Chief Justice Schweitzer. In a complete turnaround, Burns recognized the authenticity of the common law court while stating that he was disappointed in the American public for falling into an ignorance and slumber, allowing the nation to reach the point that it has. Chief Justice Schweitzer then took over the proceedings and presented the facts to the board of other five justices. This common law venue is what they have been asking for since long before any confrontation with the FBI and other law enforcement. Amazingly, it was granted. Chief Justice Schweitzer cited the National Constitution and that of Montana and dozens of sections from the United States Titles 26 and 28 and supplemental U.S. codes to prove the judicial authority of this court to act. The justices conferred for a short time before issuing the order of the Superior Court to abort the forthcoming trial of the Freeman by the federal judiciary and to release them from custody. The 22 American nationals have now been acquitted of all charges. Unless someone from the federal side of this legal fracas can quickly find something unlawful about this proceeding, this common law grand jury decision will prevail. Today, Tuesday, the written order of the court served upon the Yellowstone County Sheriff, the clerk of the county court reporter, and the aforementioned District Judge James Burns on Monday. The Freeman expected to be released in a matter of days. The national media have ignored this story, either because they are not aware of the historical significance or because the suppression from above by their superiors overweighs their ability to do so, or perhaps both. Most people say this is incredible, maybe too incredible to suit many. There's got to be a catch here, they say. Indeed, to relinquish this power is to relinquish the stranglehold on the American people. Why would the feds do it? Why indeed? But the Freeman fear nothing sinister in this new development and say it is only the beginning of the removal of long-time evils in the judicial system. They see no Trojan horse and foresee liberty throughout the land. The ramifications are endless. In response to the question, does this mean that we may soon be seeing IRS agents and judges and attorneys in jail? One of the Freemen fired back without hesitation, "You are damned right it does." Too good to be true? Or is it? That story from Pat Shannon. I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is so out of character for a federal judge and for the Justice Department and for the United States government in these days when it is controlled and operated by Marxist socialists that it is extremely difficult for me to believe that there is not some trap being laid here for the future. I sincerely urge people to be extremely cautious about this because it doesn't make any sense when held up against the actions of the federal government since the socialists gained control of this government many years ago. And with that, we move on to the second part of tonight's broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, words have meaning. There is a process which we may use to determine the specific meaning of words. In this incident, the word militia, both in the language and under the law. The 1971 edition of the compact edition of the Oxford English Dictionary defines militia. 1. A system of military discipline, organization, and tactics. Manner of conducting warfare, the arts of war. 2. The control and administration of the military and naval forces of a country. 3. A military force, especially the body of soldiers in the service of a sovereign or a state. In later use, employed in more restricted sense to denote a citizen army, as distinguished from a body of mercenaries or professional soldiers. 4. United States, the whole body of men declared by law amenable to military service without enlistment, whether armed and drilled or not. Militia, to call out as militia. Militiaman, a member of a military force. Black's Law Dictionary further defines these terms. Bear in mind that words have meaning. Under the law, the words may not mean what you think. Also, you will note in the following definition that the militia is not subordinate to the state or any other body. The body of citizens, in fact, constitute the body of authority to which the militia answers. Militia. The body of citizens in a state enrolled for discipline as a military force, but not engaged in actual service except in emergencies, as distinguished from regular troops or a standing army. State versus Dawson, 272 NC 535 159 SE 2nd 19. Militiaman comprehends every temporary citizen soldier who in time of war or emergency enters active military service of the country. Critchlow versus Monson, 102 Utah 378 131 P. 2nd, 794, 798. The first U.S. document in law is the Unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America, commonly known as the Declaration of Independence. It sets out the reasons and justifications for our separation from England and the Revolutionary War that followed. The document places the decision and the power in the hands of the people, and was clearly meant to be enforced by the militia, a citizen's army. That army, the Continental Army of the Republic, the First Continental Army of the Republic, won our independence. The Declaration of Independence clearly states, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. It becomes much clearer, ladies and gentlemen. Our founding fathers discussed the meaning and purpose of the militia frequently. I suggest you read the whole of the Federalist Papers, number 24 through 34. You will find a complete argument for the militia as a citizen's army, consisting of the whole of the people, designed to allay the public fears of a despotic central government. The following statements, among many others, may be found. Quote, if the representatives of the people betray their constituents, there is then no resource left but in the exertion of that original right of self-defense which is paramount to all positive forms of government. End quote. Federalist Papers, number 28, section 8. End quote. It may safely be received as an axiom in our political system that the state governments will, in all possible contingencies, afford complete security against the invasions of public liberty by the national authority. End quote. Federalist Papers, number 28, section 8. The Constitution for the United States of America is the supreme law of the land. It recognizes the militia as an already existing force outside the control of the federal government, but allows for the Congress to call forth the militia for only three very specific occurrences. The militia cannot be called up to perform any other acts outside of the three specifically stated in the Constitution. The militia cannot be called upon to do anything unconstitutional, illegal, or unlawful. Indeed, the commanders must refuse any unconstitutional, illegal, or unlawful order. The Constitution for the United States of America states in Article 1, Section 8, and I quote, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. And of course, you know, well, we'll get into that later. Still fearful of an oppressive central government, the states rejected the Constitution. They finally agreed to adopt the instrument, but only after pinning further safeguards to protect the individual and the several states. 10 amendments were added, which came to be known as the Bill of Rights. The preamble of those amendments and Article 2 are of particular note, and most of you have never read the preamble to the Bill of Rights, known as the First 10 Amendments. And most publishers of the Bill of Rights conveniently leave out this preamble, which is as much a part of the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, as is the preamble to the Constitution for the United States of America itself. I quote, preamble, the conventions of a number of the states, having at the time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, the founders were afraid that the Constitution by itself would not protect the people against an oppressive, tyrannical government. They believed that the Federalists, without the protection of the first 10 amendments, could make or change or create an oppressive government from that which had been formed at the convention in Philadelphia. And so, of all of the 10, they created the final, which was numbered the second, article and amendment, in order for the people to have power to fall back upon. And it says very simply, a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And let me read that to you one more time, ladies and gentlemen. The second article in amendment to the Constitution for the United States of America. Shall not be infringed. Our founding fathers, ladies and gentlemen, gave us all the tools. Unfortunately, we have slipped into a state of absolute slumber, stupidity, ignorance, and apathy. For it is all there for anyone who wishes to look. After giving us all of the guarantees of the rights which they believed, and which I sincerely believe, that God has endowed upon every single person when they are born, they laid out the protections that would enable us to maintain those rights, unless we absolutely lost our minds. It's all here. I'm not going to list all of the freedoms that the Constitution gives us. I'm not going to list the rights that it protects for us. I'm not going to list the restrictions that it puts upon government. I'm merely going to give you the last fallback, and that's the second article in amendment. And I'm going to give you the arguments that you can use in case people say that the militia is the right of the state and not of the people. And you will see clearly the path that you must take. Because freedom, yours and mine, is ultimately dependent upon the rights guaranteed by all these words, all with specific meaning. It is imperative that we understand the meaning. A militia is an armed citizenry, which according to the American Heritage Dictionary, is not a part of the regular armed forces, but is on call for service in an emergency. The Federalist Papers show that the militia, referred to in the Second Amendment, is the armed citizenry. It is the right of the people, not the right of any government entity which is protected. The security of a free state clearly presupposes that the state, The citizenry is free and needs to secure that freedom by defending the Constitution for the United States, the guarantor of that freedom, against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The oath I took twice when I entered the Air Force and then later the United States Navy. And, if you want to be technical, a third time when I became the director of the intelligence service of the Second Continental Army of the Republic. Enemies foreign obviously refers to entities or governments not of our country. Enemies domestic can only refer to an entity or government of our country. In effect, a government which would choose to make itself an enemy of the people by depriving its citizens of their constitutionally protected natural rights. This, ladies and gentlemen, is called tyranny. The primary reason for and purpose of a militia and armed citizenry, a militia available to a government of the people, but beyond the purview of a government against the people, is to secure the freedom of the people against just such a government. You see, the active clause in the second article in amendment is, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The portion which states, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, is the descriptive clause, and thus the meaning is clear. For those of you who did not understand basic English in high school, you probably will not understand what I just gave to you. But for those of you who did, and who do understand the English language, you understand clearly the meaning of the active clause, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And I wonder just what it is about infringed that those in Congress today and the socialists, the Marxists, the ones who would disarm the American people do not understand. Now, just in case those you are discussing this with do not understand, keep referring to the control of the state and all of this other absolute blathering bullshit, I suggest you carry a copy of the Constitution with you. And when that article of objection or argument emerges from their lips, as it usually does, I would simply point out Article 9, that is, Article 9 in amendment of the Bill of Rights, which clearly states, quote, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Notice it says nothing about state. It says retained by the people. And Article 10 in amendment, the last article of the Bill of Rights, simply states, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. End quote. It's very clear, ladies and gentlemen, that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And if the Constitution does not specifically deny those rights to the people, they remain with the people and belong to the people. And in Article 10, it specifically states that if the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, but notice that if the state does not take the reins and execute its power, then it is reserved to the people, and the people have the right to exercise the powers. Which means if your state does not provide for a militia that cannot be called up for by the federal government, a militia that will protect the Constitution for the state and for the United States, then it is up to the people to provide such a militia. And the Constitution protects those rights completely and totally. The Constitution also gives the people the right to contract, and says that the right to contract shall not be, ladies and gentlemen, taken away, interfered with, disparaged, or anything else. Read it for yourself. It is absolutely incredible that most people do not understand what it is that they were born with. Nor do they understand the instrument penned by our founding fathers to protect what we were born with. The militia, as you have just learned, is a citizen's army made up of the whole of the people, protected by the Constitution for the United States of America, for the purpose of guarding against betrayal by their representatives, to afford complete security against the invasions of public liberty by the national authority. And if either occurs, it is their right, their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And that is not all. John Rowland puts it this way. Some commit the non sequitur that reserving the training of militias and the training of their officers to the states, as provided in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 16, means delegating an exclusive power to the state governments. It is clear from the language and from historical analysis of the development of the Constitution that reserving to the states only means the power is denied to the national government. For the framers, the state was the people of the state, not the government of the state. When they wanted to indicate the government of a state, they used the language of law, which defined the state, legislature of the state, as they did in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 17. It was left to the people of each state to decide what powers, if any, to delegate to their state government for organizing and training militias and for the appointment of the officers. In the absence of such delegation of authority under common law and established practice during the period in which the Constitution was adopted and right up to this day, the authority defaults to local communities. The practice was for militias to be organized by county or township, usually under the authority of the highest elected law enforcement official, such as the sheriff or constable. However, any credible person could call up the militia, as Paul Revere did during his famous midnight ride. And that doesn't end it, ladies and gentlemen. You see, most states have abdicated. They claim that the National Guard is the militia, but the National Guard was formed under the United States power to raise and support armies, not to call up the militia. The states have given over their power, and the United States of America trains the officers of the National Guard. In the absence of the state taking its responsibility to provide for a militia to protect the people against a tyrannical government, the powers fall to the people, and thus the right to form, to train, to drill, to support and maintain a militia is clearly the responsibility and the duty of the people. My domicile is in Arizona. I cannot cover the Constitution and statutes of every state, although we have done that on this broadcast. We have read you the laws from the constitutions of all 50 of the states, of the 50 states, on this broadcast. But tonight I will not do that. I don't have enough time left. So I will cover Arizona as representative of the average state. You should make a thorough study of the Constitution and statutes of your particular state, because while most are essentially the same, there are a few states with major differences, such as New York. The Constitution of Arizona states, quote, in Article 2, bearing arms, Section 26, the right of the individual citizen to bear arms in defense of himself or the state shall not be impaired, but nothing in this section shall be construed as authorizing individuals or corporations to organize, maintain, or employ an armed body of men. Notice that it does not give the right to the state, but to the individual. The right of the individual citizen to bear arms in defense of himself or the state shall not be impaired. In Arizona, ladies and gentlemen, everyone is armed. The only ones that I can think of who aren't is the small New Age community down in Phoenix and the large New Age community in Sedona, who somehow believe that by giving up their right to defend themselves, they're going to be safe and secure. After all, they have Eleanor Roosevelt in the form of a spirit guide to Hillary Clinton to protect them. The laws of the state of Arizona are clear. Under Title 26, Article 2, Militia, Section 26-121, it outlines the composition of the militia and the persons exempt. Notice who is exempt, and understand that the definition of exempt in the law means prohibited. Those prohibited are the very ones who might betray the people. They therefore cannot be allowed to function as members of the militia, the last refuge of the people against tyranny. And I quote, "The militia of the state of Arizona consists of all able-bodied citizens of the state between the ages of 18 and 45 years, and all residents of the state between such ages who have declared their intention to become citizens of the United States, except 1. Persons exempted by the laws of the state or the United States, 2. Idiots, lunatics, totally blind persons, and persons convicted of infamous crimes, which means felonies, and 3. Judges and clerks of courts of record, state and county civil officers holding office by election, and members of the legislature." Title 26, Section 26-122, Components of Militia. A. The militia is divided into the National Guard of Arizona, the State Guard when organized, and the unorganized militia. E. The unorganized militia consists of members of the militia, not members of the National Guard or State Guard when organized. Now, most people would stop here, ladies and gentlemen. That is, if they even got this far. And I'll guarantee most of you never even thought of it. But there is more, a lot more. The United States has a militia. It is outlined in the United States Code. We will use the 1988 edition, Volume 3, Title 10, Armed Forces, Chapter 13. Quote, "The Militia, Section 311, Militia, Composition and Classes, A. The militia of the United States consists of all able-bodied males at least 17 years of age and except as provided in Section 313 of Title 32 under 45 years of age and who are or who have made a declaration of intention to become citizens of the United States and the female citizens of the United States who are commissioned officers of the National Guard. B. The classes of the militia are 1. The organized militia, which consists of the National Guard and the naval militia, and 2. The unorganized militia, which consists of the members of the militia who are not members of the National Guard or the naval militia. So you see, dear listeners, there is a lot to this militia stuff. It goes on to list virtually the same and more exempted persons, and for the same reasons as the state of Arizona. Title 32 mentioned makes persons who were honorably discharged from the armed forces members of the militia until the age of 64 years, the maximum age that one may become a member of the National Guard, up until no longer physically or mentally able to serve. Read all this yourself for a complete understanding. It is both easier to understand than you think and much, much more complicated than you ever dreamed. There are many militias. The first is and always will be the militia of the whole of the people, armed to protect themselves from betrayal by their representatives and from a government that might become or has become a tyrant. The second, third, and fourth is the militia of the state, the National Guard, State Guard, and the unorganized militia of the several states of the Union. The fifth, sixth, and seventh is the United States Militia, the National Guard, Naval Militia, and the unorganized militia of the federal government, its possessions, territories, and trusts. Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to James Madison, said that a Bill of Rights is what the people are entitled to against every government on earth, general and particular. Again, in his first inaugural address, he included among the essential principles of government a well-disciplined militia, and the supremacy of the civil over the military authority. And should we wander from these principles in moments of error and alarm, let us hasten to retrace our steps and to regain the road which alone leads to peace, liberty, and safety. End quote. 18 United States Code Service, Section 1385. Use of Army and Air Force as posse comitatus. Whoever, except in cases and under circumstances expressly authorized by the Constitution or Act of Congress, willfully uses any part of the Army or the Air Force as a posse comitatus, or otherwise to execute the laws, shall be fined not more than $10,000, or imprisoned not more than 2 years, or both. Added August 10, 1956, Chapter 1041, Section 18A, 70A, Statute 626, June 25, 1959, Public Law 86-70, Section 17, small d, 73, Statutes 144. We, the people, the citizenry, have both a right and a responsibility, nay, a duty, individually and collectively, to keep and bear arms, in order to defend ourselves against all enemies of our Constitution and the rights and freedoms thereby guaranteed. What kind of arms? Any kind it takes. Obviously, arms must be kept and borne in a responsible manner in order to serve the constitutionally stated need and purpose. The Second Amendment is not concerned, as some absurdly would suggest, with hunting and sporting rights, albeit these rights exist, along with the right to defend our lives and property. The intent, ladies and gentlemen, of the Second Amendment is to arm the citizenry to defend itself against every government on earth, foreign or domestic, which would make itself an enemy of the people by violating their constitutionally protected rights, and that includes the government of your state or the government of the United States of America, should those governments turn against its citizens and become oppressively tyrannical. You see, government is the servant. Government is the servant of an armed citizenry. It is the tyrant over an unarmed citizenry. Just witness the many tragic illustrations of this deplorable state around the world today. No government by the people and for the people need fear the arms of the people. Only a government against the people and their rights need fear their arms. To lay down our arms is to transfer all power, all control from the people to the government, thereby destroying, not securing our freedom, for which once men were willing to die. And I tell you, there are men today, I included, who are still willing to die. The price of liberty, as Thomas Jefferson and others have warned, is eternal vigilance. This is not to be construed, ladies and gentlemen, as an indictment against our present government, although such an indictment is certainly called for. That is not the purpose of tonight's broadcast. But vigilance requires that we be ever aware that tyrannies have arisen both from within and from without throughout history, that history indeed often repeats itself, and that can happen here. Arise from indifference. Take a stand. Unite, form militias, and advise your congressmen of your resolve. Remind them that their duty is to serve the people as provided by our Constitution, and that any action which would violate our constitutionally protected rights will not be tolerated. And don't neglect to thank those congressmen who support and defend our rights, that is, if you can find one. On September 15th, 1994, that's September 15th, 1994, President Clinton, in his speech, praised the patriots of the American Revolution for having taken up arms against a tyrannical government. I wonder, ladies and gentlemen, if he even knew what it was that he said. I wonder if he knows that he is dangerously close to being another tyrant. These days, I wonder if he knows anything at all, or whether he just mouths words. Where does this leave us? Well, the report of the Subcommittee on the Constitution of the Committee on the Judiciary, United States Senate, 97th Congress, 2nd Session, February 1982, page 11, states, and I quote, "The militia refers to a concept of a universally armed people, not to any specifically organized unit. When the framers referred to the equivalent of our National Guard, they uniformly used the term select militia and distinguished this from militia. Debates over the Constitution constantly referred to organized militia units as a threat to freedom comparable to that of a standing army, and stressed that such organized units did not constitute, and indeed were philosophically opposed to the concept of a militia. That the National Guard is not the militia referred to in the Second Amendment is even clearer today. You see, Congress has organized the National Guard under its power to raise and support armies, and not its power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. H.R. Report No. 141, 73rd Congress, 1st Session, February 5, 1953. This Congress chose to do in the interests of organizing reserve military units which were not limited in deployment by the strictures of our power over the constitutional militia, which can be called forth only to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. The modern National Guard was specifically intended to avoid status as the constitutional militia, a distinction recognized by Title 10, United States Code, Section 311A. End quote. A militiaman is simply any citizen in his capacity as a defender of the community who is obliged to do so within his or her ability. Militiahood is a role which citizens may play as the situation requires. It is not a permanent condition. But just as each citizen has a duty to defend the community, he also has the duty to prepare himself to play that role effectively and to join with others in his community to train and to function as organized forces, and the elected officials of his community have the duty to facilitate that organization and training. If those officials fail in their duty, the militiaman must carry on without their participation. The militia can only be called up by the federal government for those things specifically outlined in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution for the United States of America. Militiamen cannot answer a call from the federal government for any other purpose. The militia may be called up by a state governor for many reasons other than those cited in the U.S. Constitution. No militiaman can ever answer any call which would involve him or his militia unit in anything that is illegal, unlawful, or unconstitutional. No militia unit or militiaman can ever accept or carry out any order which is illegal, unlawful, or unconstitutional. If the federal or state government ignores the restraints put upon them by their constitutions and constitutional laws, the militia is obligated, it is their duty, to march upon that government and enforce the laws of the state and of the federal government and restore those constitutions as the supreme law of the land. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless you all.